Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, taking time out in the day to begin with some inspiration, to talk a little bit about current events, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is January 3rd, 2011, and you're listening to show number 126. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We do have a few people in the live chat on Blog Talk Radio, so come on over and post your comments and questions right in the live chat with us. I would like to remind everyone that this is a simple study session and any listeners must consult their health care provider. Don't forget to go to the Blog Talk website and click Listen, Friend, and the little heart for favorite. You can listen to the old shows and download them to your computer, iTunes, or iPod. I'm looking forward to your comments. I would like to start today with some inspiration. Mohammed Gandhi said, "Infinite love is a weapon of matchless potency. It is the summum bonum of life. It is an attribute of the brave. In fact, it is their all. It does not come within the reach of the coward. It is no wooden or lifeless dogma, but a living and life-giving force. It is the special attribute of the heart." And we all know Gandhi lived 1869 to 1948. Also, the Dalai Lama has reached me with a message today as I was on Twitter and someone posted a video. He was speaking about planting the seed of compassion to heal yourself in order to connect with others. I felt as if he was speaking of unconditional love. People search for happiness, but it is something within that you cannot chase after. Happiness is simply an attitude. The Dalai Lama speaks of it as a meaningful life of compassion. I am quoting his words now. He says, "Inner peace is the ultimate source of happiness and joyfulness." I'll post a link to those videos so that you can hear him in his full glory. As we think about this new year and this new cycle, I'm sure a lot of people have been thinking of New Year's resolutions. And already, have you been keeping them, or have you been able to even begin the first week, the first few days, and stand by whatever resolution you tried to give to yourself? Did you write it down? Did you repeat it to yourself when you awoke and when you went to sleep? Even if you did not keep it, start again each day fresh and new. That is my inspiration for today. And we had some very good speakers with us in life and in memory. I would also like to thank those people who are on the HWC, the Homeopathy World Community Network, for being very active and sharing what they know and their history. We have a blog by Dr. Basu regarding her conversion to homeopathy. And then additionally, everyone has been posting some famous physicians who have also turned from the regular allopathy to homeopathy based on their personal search for healing and to help their family members or their friends, or to when they see persons who are suffering, they're looking for ways to heal. So open your heart and open your mind and go into a place of bravery, courage, and see the vital force at work. She has also started a brand new group on HWC called The Scope of, it's Homeopathy Plus Surgery. And it's going to be very interesting to see where this group goes and what we talk about in this group regarding how surgery and homeopathy mesh together, how it's used. She begins with a story about the scope of homeopathy in surgery and what Hahnemann himself has written about it, how it is utilized, where it is appropriate, when it will cover the disease or assist in alleviating suffering, and when it is really not going to cover the full extent of the disease, which will either lay dormant or keep surfacing. So he says, Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine first mentions surgery in aphorism number 13. He divides the types of the diseases as two. One, that does not come within the province of manual surgery. For instance, the dynamic diseases and the other surgical diseases. He separated this from the beginning, where there is a necessity, he said, we have to go for surgery. That is manual surgery. He describes these conditions in aphorism number 7. For instance, when you have to extract from the cornea the foreign body that excites inflammation of the eye, lay bare and put ligature on the wounded artery that produces fainting. Endeavor to promote the expulsion from vomiting of belladonna berries that may have been swallowed, or extract foreign substances that may have gotten into the orifices of the body, or crush the vesicle calculus, open the perforate anus of the newborn infant. So when there is something that is obvious that needs surgery, if someone has broken a bone, you need to put it back into correct position and reset that bone. There are instances of mechanical surgery that need to be taken place. So we could read further, the scope of surgery in homeopathy for in case of injuries accruing to the body from without. If they be at all severe, the whole organism sympathizes. There occur fever. The treatment of such disease is relegated to surgery, but this is right only insofar as the affected parts require the mechanical aid. So here Hahnemann is saying that when there has been an external force that has changed the body, that needs to be put right again, as if you can feel it on the outside. For instance, if someone is in an accident where they fell from a tree, a kid who's climbing and falls from a tree, this definitely needs to be taken care of again in a similar manner by an external force. So here it says, whereby the external obstacles to the cure, which can only be expected to take place by the agency of the vital force, may be removed by mechanical means, by the reduction of dislocations, by bandages to bring together the lips of wound, by mechanical pressure to still the flow of blood from open arteries, by the extraction of foreign bodies that have penetrated into the living parts, although we do know that silicio or silica homeopathically can assist the body in pushing out anything that splinters and other things that have gotten into the body and are possible to be removed in that way, by making an opening to the cavity of the body in order to remove the irritating substance, or to procure the evacuation of effusions or collections of fluids. So when you have something that needs to be discharged, are there mechanical methods, or such as the remedy Hepersulf is also something that can help bring this discharge out of the body without having to use a mechanical means. By bringing into opposition the broken extremities of a fractured bone and retaining them in exact contact by an appropriate bandage. So we see when we have to take our surgery into account and when it is most appropriate. Of course, when such surgeries, injuries, the whole living human organism requires, as it always does, an active, dynamic aid to put it into position to accomplish the work of healing. When the violent fever resulting from extensive lacerated muscles, tendons, and blood vessels requires to be removed by medicine given internally, or when the external pain of scalded or burnt parts needs to be homeopathically subdued, then the services of the dynamic physician and his helpful homeopathy come into requisition. Thank you, Dr. Basu, for providing this information to us. So we see that when it is the entire vital force that is in need of assistance, then homeopathy comes into play. When it is a localized instance, then we need to use our surgery. And if there's any comments, I welcome them on the live chat today. On a more lively topic, Dr. Basu has also added a little game for those who are members of HWC. It's a word game where, like kids who are driving on a long trip in the car, they have to keep themselves occupied, but it's kind of fun and we can learn about our remedies by doing this word game. You just write the word. She's given an example, the word or the name Kent, K-E-N-T, and the last letter then begins the next word. Anybody can jump in on that game. So she's got Kent, and then the last word, the last letter starts with T, so the next word is Tabacum, which we know is for seasickness, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, which is much, much better only if you have your eyes closed. It can be very debilitating situation when tobacco, our plant that we are very familiar with for smoking, is used for healing. Then the last letter of the word tobacco is an M, and someone, she put Marjorie Grace Blackie, a famous homeopath. And so on and on we go with this game, and I hope it goes on for a long time. We have a question. Did homeopaths do minor surgery and set bones? Homeopaths were physicians. So homeopaths were versed in all sorts of methods of healing. Most of them started off as regular physicians and then changed to homeopathy as they became disenchanted with the means of the time, and they learned that homeopathy, which is a very gentle, rapid healing art, could be used. And in recent talks, we've been talking about that homeopaths were proving these remedies on themselves, and we're going to get into that in a minute or so. I'd also like to direct your attention to a blog written by Dr. Vikas Verma. He says, Offensive Breath Tips by Dr. Herring. And Dr. Herring, obviously, not only in our own time did we have morning breath or halitosis, which is caused by accumulation of bacteria in the mouth. He has a little blog here telling us about offensive breath. And it, I don't know whether the person who actually has the offensive breath themselves is aware of it, or they have to be distanced from it in order to realize it's going on in their body. And it can be a clue to many other things and signals what homeopathic remedies might be used. So he says that Dr. Herring says bad breath may be caused from a disordered stomach, abuse of mercury, decayed teeth, disease of the gums, ulcers in the mouth, catarrh of the nose, and sore throat. So there are many etiologies to this bad breath besides simply the germ of bacteria. So there's, if it is a dynamic disease, it's referring to much more going on with the human body. He says, for want of proper attention to cleanliness, leaving particles of food in the teeth, what do? You rinse the mouth and throat after each meal with cold water and brush the teeth with a soft brush after each meal. And I've also read that you will also brush your tongue. If the cause of your halitosis is from decayed teeth, then you must consult a dentist. Or if this cannot be conveniently done, the cavities in the teeth should be carefully cleaned. The tooth can be readily cleaned by making use of a roll of blotting paper of convenient size and applying it repeatedly to the decayed part. So this is news to me. Rinsing the mouth with water, chewing a roasted coffee bean, will improve the breath for a while. The smell of garlic or horseradish may be overcome by drinking some wine, eating a pear, or a boiled beet, or by chewing fresh parsley. This is very interesting, isn't it? When the offensive breath arises from a deranged stomach or some other diseases, the proper remedy for it will be found under their respective heads. If the bad breath is only perceived in the morning, Kent recommends to give Nux Vomica. In the morning and at night, he recommends the homeopathic remedy Pulsatilla. After dinner only, he recommends chamomilla. And besides, in many cases, bryonia, arnica, arsenicum, and hyoscyamus. If the breath smells like onions, give sepia, sepa allium, allium sepa. Sweet, sickish, as if much mercury has been used, then you would use mercurius. And if it is a putrid smell, carbo vegetabilis. For a bad breath with a white-coated tongue, in persons of very changeable disposition and who easily take cold, give Nux moschata, which is a relative of Nux vomica. And so those are tips about taking care of your bad breath from Dr. Herring. In addition, Dr. Rajneesh Kumar Sharma, MD, has listed, I would say, from the repertory, at least 50 rubrics dealing with the mouth odor that is putrid in all sorts of situations, whether it's eating, coughing, for emotional anger, for when a woman is having her menses, when it is accompanied with inflammation or perspiration or other sorts of things going on in the body, particular smells. What does the odor of the mouth smell like? So this is very peculiar because it seems only homeopaths can decipher and explain specifically these specific, these are not sensations, but odors. To say that your odor, the odor coming from your body is cadaverous or earthy or like fish brine or like milk or simply offensive. These are words that naturally come to the individual who is sensing what's going on. And therefore, that's why a homeopath uses the actual words of the person who is experiencing these things. And that way they can look it up. There's even one for when the mouth odor smells sweetish, sulfurous, or like stool, or like urine, or like vinegar, or sour, or sickening. So you can see how wonderful it is to have homeopathy as our guide. We can learn so much, and I want to thank Dr. Rajneesh for that listing. And under each one, it gives either one or more homeopathic remedies. And remember that it is always best to seek a professional and not to treat yourself, to find out the totality of your case, what exactly is going wrong, find out more than just one keynote or one thing that you can hang your hat on. You really need to know exactly what's going on in the body and treat it properly. And so I want to thank you again for that. And I want to thank everyone who is on the network providing so much information and sharing. In addition, I want to bring your attention to the homeopath online newspaper. Every single day, there is a daily paper where there's about 160 or more homeopaths who contribute via Twitter. And you can see that link right on the right-hand column of HWC where it says the homeopaths daily. Quite a bit of content on there. I think we're going to go right ahead and begin our talk about the Organon today. I wanted to refresh your memory because it seems like it's been some time since we were on from Monday to Monday. We were talking about provings for the last month or so and how it relates to clinical trials and specifically what the homeopath must do in a proving, how a supervisor takes care of dispensing the remedies, and whether it is blind or double blind, how scientifically the provings are done in the scientific method, that it is a pure art, and we are very discerning in making sure that the medicines are accurately described in aphorism number 145 of a Hahnemann states of a truth that is only by a very considerable store of medicines accurately known in respect of these, their pure modes of action in altering the health of a man, that we can be placed in a position to discover a homeopathic remedy, a suitable artificial curative morbific analog for each of the infinitely numerous morbid states in nature for every malady in the world. This is a tall order. Hahnemann believed that every malady could be handled through homeopathic remedies if and only if we understand the state of illness. We understand what the capacity of each drug is on a healthy human being. And we do this through provings by giving the remedy in potentized succussed form to healthy individuals, and they record exactly in linear time what is happening to them. And that is why giving you the example of the bad breath, everything can be described so succinctly, so uniquely by each individual in their own words. And in aphorism number 146, the third point of the business of a true physician relates to the judicious employment of the artificial morbific agents, which are called medicines. And the reason that he says that they're artificial morbific agents is because it is not the natural disease, but one that is similar to the natural disease, which we are now going to be able to have the person who is ill incur this stronger disease that is similar to the natural disease, but we are giving it to the person. Therefore, it is artificially induced. And so that has been proved on a healthy individual to ascertain their pure action in order to effect the homeopathic cure of natural diseases. And therefore, we know how important it is for those who are taking part and participating in approving to have a good lifestyle, to have a clean life, to not have anything interfering with understanding the actual effects of the drug. In aphorism number 147, whichever of these medicines that have been investigated as to their power of altering man's health, we find to contain in the symptoms observed from its use the greatest similarity to the totality of the symptoms of a given natural disease. This medicine will and must be the most suitable, the most certain homeopathic remedy for the disease. In it is found the specific remedy of this case of disease. And there he is speaking of a similimum, what it is that has changed in the individual, you're going to be able to select the homeopathic remedy. The closer you are to the similimum, the more rapid, gentle, and if complete and total cure will occur. If it is not exactly the spot-on remedy of the similimum, then you're going to perhaps get a partial alleviation of symptoms. We have here questions from Lone Wolf Nan. They have recently found evidence of surgeries being done thousands of years ago. Yes, that is true. They did a lot of drilling in the brain, actually, many thousands of years ago, probably to release evil spirits from the brain. Okay, and there was a question whether they were homeopaths were licensed to perform surgery. Yes, if you are, most of the people in India who are have gone through training are trained in surgery, and that is their designation. Aphorism number 148, the natural disease is never to be considered as a noxious material situated somewhere within the interior or exterior of man. And he refers to aphorisms 11 through 13, which means basically that we're not looking for a virus, a bacteria, a germ, an external noxious agent that we have to rid. Somewhat like I always think of the analogy of killing the termites in your home, in the foundation of your home, which is causing destruction and deterioration within the walls of the foundation and the root of your home. And if you just kill those termites, you still are left with the weakened structure. You have not really rooted out the entire disease in the home. You have not strengthened it and replaced it with something stronger. And homeopathy is something that does that. And it enables the human spirit itself, the human vital force, to expel and annihilate the natural disease by giving the similimum, this artificial similar disease. So in aphorism number 148, but as one produced by an inimical spirit-like conceptual agency, which like a kind of infection, and he notes aphorism number 11, disturbs in its instinctive existence of the spirit-like conceptual principle of life within the organism, torturing it as an evil spirit and compelling it to produce certain ailments and disorders in the regular course of its life. So what he's trying to say to us here is that the symptoms that we are actually sensing and observing is something that is an effect of the disordered vital force. If you're in a weakened state and unable to react and respond to some agent on the external, in the external world, you know that influenza or other kinds of diseases, or even just your general cold, there are people who are sneezed on and coughed on and they just don't get sick. Why? What is it with those people? They are strong, have a strong vital force, whereas other people, they may get sick from this contagious disease spreading from someone coughing or sneezing near them. However, they may have a unique way of symptomatology within themselves, whereas someone else starts with burning, runny eyes, they may start with stuffed up nose and congestion or something in their lungs or even stomach indigestion. So each person has their own way of dealing with illness or susceptibility to being ill. Let's see if there's any other questions coming in. Okay, so we have a question that when you're given a disease or an illness, the symptoms often change, sometimes rapidly. How do you choose a remedy when things are always changing? We take it, if this is an acute situation and things are changing, you have to look at what is happening at the time. And you also, the homeopathic physician, has a very good knowledge of what the remedies can do. And in previous aphorisms, Hahnemann has stated that each individual will respond differently to the remedy in the proving situation, and it is a composite of all of these symptoms that describes a remedy. So perhaps at one point in the evolution of the disease in the individual, they have one type of thing, let's say the fever. So you deal with this fever at the time that it is displaying itself, and these are the symptoms that the homeopath has to go on. And from there, if the symptomatology changes and goes to a different prodromal part of the disease, then there's often companion remedies that go with that, or you understand that that is also similar or part of the way that that remedy is going to help the person to perhaps have an aggravation of something, or if it changes to another symptomatology altogether, you might have to change the remedy and do that rapidly as the individual is changing. And this often happens during influenza. I hope that answered the question, and if you still have more questions about it, we can talk about that further. These are, continuing with aphorism number 148, these are known as symptoms disease. If now the influence of this inimical agency that not only caused but strives to continue this disorder be taken away, as is done when the physician administers an artificial potency capable of altering the life principle in the most similar manner, a homeopathic medicine, which exceeds in energy even in the smallest dose the similar natural disease, then the influence of the original noxious morbid agent on the life principle is lost during the action of this stronger, similar artificial disease. Thence, the evil no longer exists for the life principle, it is destroyed. If, as has been said, the selected homeopathic remedy is administered properly, then the acute natural disease, which is to be overruled if recently developed, will disappear imperceptibly in a few hours. An older, more chronic disease will yield somewhat later, together with all traces of discomfort. By the use of several doses of the same, more highly potentized remedy, or after careful selection of one or another more similar homeopathic medicines. There, Hahnemann has answered your question in the chat room that there might be a need for a selection of a higher potency or the careful selection of one or another similar homeopathic medicines. Health, recovery follow in imperceptible, often rapid transitions. The life principle is freed again and capable of resuming the life of the organism in health as before, and strength returns. And I have not mentioned this, but there is something called Herring's Law, where healing takes place from the present time into the past, from upper and then below, from inner and outer, from the most important vital organs need to be properly protected and secured. And so the body naturally throws the disease out to lesser organs like the skin. And so it's usually good to see things on the skin. And we have a whole discussion on HWC regarding the importance of a fever and what it means in disease. So sometimes it is really good. And having these contagious diseases spread through a community can actually strengthen the vital force, because then it's like pumping iron. It's like doing your exercise and pumping muscle. The more you work your immune system and more you work your vital force, the stronger it will become, because when it can throw off the disease on its own, or if not, if it needs a homeopathic remedy to assist it, it recognizes that similarity. It recognizes the artificial force which is given to help the body to remove the natural force. And usually, there was recently an article that I read how someone was given their remedy And after years of having a disease, once that remedy, it was actually in the recent Homeopathy Today regarding strep throat in a young girl who had had this strep throat continuously every year, and then she was given the proper homeopathic semillimum, and 4 years later, she still had not had any troubles, and she had become a brighter, happier, healthier individual. So just getting the semillimum one time can strengthen the individual. I'm trying to see if there's anything else during this aphorism number 148 that we want to explain a little bit more. He does say that the organism is suffering. There is it is being tortured by supposedly these evil spirits. But we know that the body and the mind and the spirit are all connected. And that is the beauty of homeopathy, that we are taking all of this into account, into consideration, that ailments come from something beyond what we can actually see. And we're just looking at as an observer, looking at the symptoms that the body gives us, that the mind gives us when we realize and listen to the person's own words, that they say that they're in a great sickness and they are in their own bed and they still say, I want to go home, I want to go home. Something's going on in their vital force, in their emotional state of being. And what does this mean? Only the homeopath can really understand that. And fortunately, we have the Materia Medica, the encyclopedias of the provings, and we also have the rubrics in the repertory to look up these words that the people speak and understand what their disease is. There is a footnote to aphorism number 148. One of the greatest things I think about homeopathy is that people really want to be understood. That is one of the guideposts of being at peace with oneself, to know that they are connecting with other people and there is compassion. And a homeopath really has to have that particular quality in the way that they treat and take care of patients and their clients, whoever it is, whether it is family, friend, or even a stranger that walks into the hospital, that there is a tremendous amount of compassion in their heart, and they do want to listen very, very carefully to the gestures, the words, the countenance of the person's being, how they're feeling, to understand who they are and what they're going through. And in aphorism number 148, the footnote states, but this laborious, sometimes very laborious, boy, he repeats it, doesn't he? Search for and selection of the homeopathic remedy most suitable in every respect to each morbid state is an operation which, notwithstanding all the admirable books for facilitating it, still demands the study of the original sources themselves, and at the same time a great amount of circumspection and serious deliberation, which have their best reward in the consciousness of having faithfully discharged our duty. So here he is reminding us of the mission of the homeopath, or really of the physician, that we do have the patient in mind as the main mission is to cure the suffering from their sickness. Hahnemann states, how could this laborious, care-demanding task, by which alone the best way of curing diseases is rendered possible, please the gentlemen of the new mongrel sect, who assume the honorable name of homeopathists and even seem to employ medicines in form and appearance homeopathic, but determined upon by them anyhow, and who, when the unsuitable remedy does not immediately give relief, in place of laying the blame on their unpardonable ignorance and laxity in performing the most important and serious of all human affairs, ascribe it to homeopathy, which they accuse of great imperfection. If the truth be told, its imperfection consists in this, that the most suitable homeopathic remedy for each morbid condition does not spontaneously fly into their mouths like roasted pigeons without any trouble on their part. This is quite a long footnote. It goes on further, but what is Hahnemann stating here? He's stating that a homeopath is a person who is really dedicated to their art and science, who studies continuously, who learns from others, who does provings on themselves, which was stating in aphorism number 146, and who should not be blaming the fact that homeopathy does not work, but that homeopathy only works when it's performed properly, when there is an understanding and a knowledge of the remedies and their actions. So here he says that even during his time, there were people who were doing not exactly his method of homeopathy in understanding what needs to be done with giving the remedies properly, the similimum or the repetition or the correct potency. It is truly an art. And he even states that it takes this laborious amount of search and selection for a remedy. This is not an easy task, and I commend anyone who becomes a homeopath. Hahnemann continues, they know, however, from frequent practice, how to make up for the inefficiency of the scarcely half homeopathic remedy by the employment of allopathic means that come much more handy to them, among which one or more dozens of leeches apply to the affected part, or little harmless venesections to the extent of 8 ounces, and so forth, play an important part. And should the patient, in spite of all this, recover, they extol their venesections and leeches, etc., alleging that, had it not been for these, the patient would not have pulled through. And they give us to understand, in no doubtful language, that these operations, derived without much exercise of genius from the pernicious routine of the old school, in reality contributed the best share towards the cure. So even in Hahnemann's time, there were people who were doing all sorts of not pure homeopathic treatments, but were using what they would fall back on what they had, which were allopathic or against the disease, not similar, just to subdue the symptoms. And when that occurred, they would give the credit to the allopathic treatments. And I'm sure that Hahnemann was quite displeased, and he even called it unpardonable ignorance and laxity in performing the most important and serious of human affairs. And therefore, he wanted to distinguish between what is specifically homeopathic treatment and homeopathic in nature. Hahnemann states, but if the patient die under the treatment, as not infrequently happens, they seek to console the friends by saying that they, quote, they themselves were witnesses that everything conceivable had been done for the lamented deceased, unquote. Who would do this frivolous and pernicious tribe the honor to call them after the name of the very laborious but salutary art, homeopathic physicians? May the just recompense await them, that when taken ill, they may be treated in the same manner. This is really harsh language and harsh words from Hahnemann himself. I am really kind of in shock to read this, that those people who are practicing homeopathic medicine should not take upon themselves the name of homeopathic physician or homeopath themselves if they are not doing specifically homeopathic treatment using the simillimum based on everything that is outlined in the Organon. And I am really, really surprised that he is saying that if a person calls themselves that, that they should receive the same treatment that they have been giving to others. I don't know how, I'm wondering what other homeopaths think about what Hahnemann said in that particular case. Moving on to aphorism number 149, if there are no questions for 148. Hahnemann states, diseases of long standing and especially such as are of a complicated character require for their cure a proportionately longer time. More especially do the chronic medicinal dyscrasia, so often produced by allopathic bungling along with the natural disease left uncured by it, require a much longer time for their recovery. Often indeed are they incurable in consequence of the shameful robbery of the patient's strength and juices via the venesections and purgatives. On account of long continued use of large doses of violently acting remedies given on the basis of empty, false theories for alleged usefulness in cases of disease appearing similar. Also in prescribing unsuitable mineral baths, the principal feat performed by allopathy in its so-called methods of treatment. So I guess in aphorism number 148 and 149, Hahnemann is going on into his rant. I guess he has finished speaking about the proving and how a true scientist, artist, homeopath secures their knowledge and understands remedies and understands disease and symptoms and the human being and the human organism, and is now saying this is not homeopathy when you're doing these other kinds of treatments. He does state in 149 that sometimes the disease is going to take a long time to cure in certain situations and instances, such that when a person has been treating with harsh and violent medicinal agents over a long period of time, this has weakened the individual to a point that perhaps their recovery is not going to occur even with homeopathic intervention. And he gives us specific instances of robbing a person's strength through venesections and purgatives and mineral baths. On to aphorism number 150. If a patient complain of one or more trivial symptoms that have been only observed a short time previously, the physician should not regard this as a fully developed disease that requires serious medical aid. A slight alteration in the diet and regimen will usually suffice to dispel such an indisposition. So here we have what every day you see on the television, in the magazines, on the internet, all of those things that we take to heart, because if we see it on the news, that we all have indigestion, we all have burning in our esophagus, so we all have diarrhea or some other symptom, that this is not an indication that we are really, really sick. It may be that our lifestyle needs a slight adjustment, and that's all. If you're drinking every day, it's not going to be good for your health. If you are not getting out and just sitting around all day, you do need that sunshine, and perhaps that would dispel your depression, because we know that there is such a thing as seasonal affective disorder, and everyone is affected by the sun and by the seasons. So he is saying take a careful and a conservative view of illness, and don't get all hyper and anxious that if someone comes with a trivial symptom, take a close look and look at the holistic way that they are living. And just a few minor changes probably can change most of our disease today. aphorism number 151 states, "But if the patient complain of a few violent sufferings, the physician will usually find on investigation several other symptoms besides, although of a slight character, which furnish a complete picture of the disease." So therefore, aphorism number 150 and 151 go hand in hand. If it's something that does not occur frequently, perhaps, I mean, if someone has been out in the garden and touches something that will start a rash, or they're outside and they get a mosquito bite, excuse me, then this is just something that can be handled in a logical method. But if the person continually comes back with very violent sufferings, you need to take a deeper case and understand much more of what's going on in the human condition. And that is how the homeopath gets a total picture of what has changed from the state of health to the state of sickness. Excuse me, I've been talking for just about an hour, and now we have aphorism number 152. The worse the acute disease is, of so much the more numerous and striking symptoms is it generally composed, but with so much the more certainty may a suitable remedy for it be found, if there be a sufficient number of medicines known with respect to their positive action to choose from. Among the lists of symptoms of many medicines, it will not be difficult to find one from whose separate disease elements an anti-type of curative artificial disease, very like the totality of the symptoms of the natural disease, may be constructed, and such a medicine is the desired remedy. So here we see aphorism number 150, 151, and 151 leads us to say that if you have taken what is a change in the person's state of health, something that is very striking in its symptoms, excuse me, the homeopath will be able to discern what is the correct remedy of choice, especially if they are well-learned, well-read, and has also understood the exact way that a drug will change a person's health from the healthy state to the ill state. And very often I've heard many people say that if you have a knowledge of just 50 of the most used Polycrest remedies, you will be able to assist a person in their healing journey. Even though there are thousands and thousands of homeopathic remedies, with that knowledge of basically 50 to 75 or 100 remedies, you can probably handle most of the cases. But this takes a lot of study, a lot of understanding of the way that the remedy can react in a person, can assist a person with this artificial morbid disease in many of the different ways, because one remedy can help a person who has many or different people who have many different ways of expressing their disease. Some persons might be going on with headaches or migraines, another person's upset stomach, another person's constipation, another person's a different kind and quality of pain in different parts of their body. And yet, the same remedy could be used for all of them. It's just the way that they are expressing their disease. So let me see. We have a few minutes left. I will go ahead with aphorism number 153. In this search for a homeopathic-specific remedy, that is to say, in this comparison of the collective symptoms of the natural disease with the list of symptoms of known medicines, in order to find among these an artificial morbid agent corresponding by similarity to the disease to be cured, the more striking, singular, uncommon, and peculiar, this is what homeopaths often call SRPs, strange, rare, and peculiar, but really what Hahnemann is saying, it is the striking, singular, uncommon, and peculiar characteristic signs and symptoms of the case of disease are chiefly and most solely to be kept in view. For it is more particularly these that very similar ones in the list of symptoms of the select medicine must correspond to, in order to constitute it the most suitable for effecting the cure. The more general and undefined symptoms, such as loss of appetite, headache, debility, restless sleep, discomfort, and so forth, demand but little attention when of that vague and indefinite character, if they cannot be more accurately described as symptoms of such a general nature are observed in almost every disease and from almost every drug. So here, Hahnemann is really telling us that we must look at these striking, singular, uncommon, and peculiar symptoms that help us define and recognize the remedy that is to be used as the similimum, as the most similar, because most drugs are going to cause this kind of disorder in the body. Most drugs are going to cause a weakness or restlessness or discomfort, a headache or a loss of appetite. It's not specific enough for a homeopath to discern the correct remedy. And the footnote to this is Dr. von Boninghausen, by the publication of the Characteristic Symptoms of Homeopathic Medicines, and his repertory has rendered a great service to homeopathy, as well as Dr. J.H.G. Yar in his Handbook of Principal Symptoms. Okay, and it looks like most of the people in the chat have finished for the day. I would like to end today's talk with a repeat of our quote from the beginning of the show. Infinite love is a weapon of matchless potency. It is the summum bonum of life. It is an attribute of the brave. In fact, it is their all. It does not come within the reach of the coward. It is no wooden or lifeless dogma, but a living and life-giving force. It is the special attribute of the heart. That was a quote from Gandhi, the Indian political leader, who was a leader in nonviolence for political action. And we also can create a nonviolent method of healing using homeopathy based on our compassion and love of the human being. I would like to thank everyone who has joined me today in listening to Who's Reading the Organon, a part of Homeopathy World Community. And we're going to end the show in just a minute.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.